Oh, hey there, and welcome to Hard to Say Goodbye. This is the show where three of your pals, Trisha.
Hi.
DJ.
That's me.
And Sam over here talking to the microphone. We're here to help you through one of the hardest times in your life, and that's when your show ends. Guys, we've all been there. The office, man, I wept for a week. But we created a system. We created a show that we want to hold your hand.
Might want to create a system. We should get a grief counselor on.
At least get a pamphlet. Make one pamphlet for it. But
okay. That makes it official if you print it on a pamphlet.
That makes it real.
Makes it real. Mm-hmm. And nothing's realer than the end of Game of Thrones, because this show has affected at least the people in this room. Maybe more, depending on who's listening to this. And we're gonna rewatch every episode.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You can watch along with us, and we can work our way through it. We'll laugh, we'll cry, we'll have a good time. But let's get into it with episode 2 of season 1, The King's Road. Here's a quick synopsis that probably won't help us out. While Bran recovers from his fall, spoilers. Ned takes only his daughter to King's Landing. Jon Snow goes with his uncle Benjen to the Wall. Tyrion joins them.
Daughters, IMDb. Daughters. I have an edit there.
No,
for you.
Daughters. Yeah.
Daughters. Yeah. I'm just blind. I can't read.
Sam's just S blind. Mm-hmm. Don't judge him.
Don't judge me.
It's a tragedy because of his name.
But okay, you mentioned right before we started recording, Trisha, that this episode starts off with an interesting visual.
Start with that?
It's at least Danny's intro for this episode. Because we intro with another bedroom scene.
Yeah.
With Cal and Danny. And we didn't mention this last episode, but here you go. Dragon eggs. There
she was given dragon eggs, and that might prove to be important later.
Maybe.
Sam, because I can't ask Trisha, because you read the books prior to watching the show, correct?
Yes.
So you knew. Mm. So Sam, I did not assume dragons were going to come out of that egg. I don't think at this point there was any inkling in my mind.
Are you asking if I?
That's because you.
I watched it last year.
I know, so you'd already heard. I didn't know. Something that appealed to me in the show is the subtle fantasy elements. It wasn't until like a couple episodes from now that I realized the whole season situation that this world deals with.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed dragons were dunzo. So I just like those are pretty rocks that I don't know. I didn't anticipate where the show was going at this point.
Now I can tell you the first book and the first season of the show follow very closely. And I can tell you when I was reading the books, there's no way at this point I thought that dragons were actually going to appear in this world because you're so immersed in the political reality of what's going on with the exception of that like opening prelude, whatever chapter, that prologue. You haven't seen anything mystical, but I will tell you the entire time I was reading the first book, I was like, oh man, please let there be dragons. Like, please let it happen.
Gosh, I want some dragons.
I'm hanging in here.
Yeah, maybe I thought the dragons would show. I just didn't think those eggs were active. I guess I was under the assumption that all the weird stuff was beyond the wall. Because, like, direwolves in our world are super extinct, been super extinct for a long time. So and they say at the beginning that the direwolves don't come beyond the wall. And we saw the White Walkers are beyond the wall. So I assumed all the weird stuff in this world was basically beyond the wall. Mm. So it was interesting that the dragon situation, the setup with Daenerys, which is challenging, harrowing. It's interesting to see how that stuff changes and evolves, and it's cool knowing where she ends up, seeing her in such a not just in that situation, but in general, such a submissive state, and her finding her voice and her strength outside of that is really cool.
Yeah, and you get it a little bit when she's talking with the Dothraki that are helping her get ready. Yeah. And like that scene I thought was really interesting when they were talking that she was possibly a prostitute. Is that what I got from it? The hand that was helping her get ready and then helped her in the bedroom later with talking about like what it means to like he rules out there, you rule in here. Like that's how it works. And I thought that scene was good because I really hated the rest of the rape scenes. I'm not going to call it.
It's really interesting because especially in the series, that's the point where there's a paradigm shift in that Daenerys says, you know what, I'm done playing the victim and I want to play more of a leadership role in this entire thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because even prior to this, it's her brother kind of dictating the situation. And it's interesting how the people around her help her suddenly realize like, hey, at this point, you're the one that matters. Mm-hmm. You're the queen. We don't really care about him. He doesn't matter to any of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only person that he matters to is himself.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Speaking of brothers and victims, we also figure out Bran didn't get smushed as soon as he hit the ground when he was kicked out of the tower. Mm-hmm. And we get the scene that really captivated me in this is when you had the assassin come in with the dagger, and you see how much of a badass hit
Catelyn is.
There we go. Yeah, she is awesome.
When they say the people in the north are hard people, mm-hmm. they're not joking around.
Well, and she wasn't born in the north.
No,
she's
but
not a native northerner, but totally. Yeah, ma'am.
She's picked up some tricks.
Mama Bear. I mean, I don't know one person that watched that when she grabs that knife didn't go...
Yeah, I still do.
But you know what? That's what you got to do.
I thought she's going to lose all of her fingers. Yeah. I was very scared for her. And then you get an awesome moment with the direwolf, and that's when I was like, oh, for sure, time's moving way faster than I think it is, because those direwolves just grow to like 6 feet in what, like a week?
Yeah,
they're also huge beasts.
Yeah,
they are. But it was growing crazy fast.
I think each of these episodes they mentioned that basically a month has passed. There's at least a line in each of these first few episodes where they're like, and a month has passed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
And during that we get the King's Road journey with Ned and Robert, and that's when you get to them talking more about why he's picked for the Hand and like what they used to do, and you get to also talk about John a little bit more about like who his mom could be.
I love there's a sequence in these first few episodes of like, hey, John, I've got some really important information to share with you that I'll share the next time we meet. Mm-hmm. Wink. Which is basically like, you're never going to see me again. Bye-bye.
Knowing now.
This is the first one was Ned like, hey, and I kind of figured even not knowing, I think I assumed when Ned was like, I'll tell you next time we meet. And I'm like, well, we're not going to meet till the end of the series. Which isn't true.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if there's an afterlife, they
Ghost
could.
Ned.
I don't know. Yeah. I still want Ghost Ned. Dang it.
Ghost Ned. That was such a cool moment. We'll talk about your mother when next we meet.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder because at that time, the books, if I remember correctly, there were not as many. I forget which book we were on when season one of the TV show came out in 2011. But the only person who would have known that information, I feel like, at that time was George, who told the showrunners how he wanted the whole thing to end. Mm. And then I wonder, did they tell Sean Bean so that he knew how to deliver that line?
And that's why they had to kill him.
Is he like the only other person that knew?
Yeah.
God.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because another really interesting thing is Robert talking about the people they bed. And there's an implication that maybe Ned did maybe sleep around, but then you realize the person he's talking about is one of Robert's, and it's funny because there's that bitterness that Catelyn is a pretty straight shooter, like almost everybody in the North, but her one thing that sticks with her, especially when Ned's all like, ooh, honor, I've got to go be the Hand because honor, and you can tell that performance is like in the back of her mind, she's like, yeah, but that one time, every time I look at John,
oh, every time,
but he's a straight honorable dude. He and so I rewatching it, that conversation between Ned and Robert is very interesting to me.
And also the actor who plays Robert, which I have in here, Mark Addy.
Yeah.
He's so good and he's captivating, and you can kind of deal with him being a little shithead or big shithead because he's king. This is mm-hmm. top of the shit hill. Yeah. But also, speaking of shit hills, there's a little one where Joffrey likes to roam around in, and he has a pretty hard scene to watch. And we were talking before we recorded, which I wish we were recording during that, was that we'll explain what you were saying about Sansa and Joffrey at this point when you were watching it the first time.
When I was watching the first time, I don't think I realized how important a player Joffrey was. I figured he was just another little annoying kid like Sansa, but just slightly worse than Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's underestimating his potential.
Mm-hmm. For being a little shithead.
Yeah.
And for, I think a lot of people watch this first season and super underestimate Sansa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, where she is at her age and at her maturity at that point is very much, I'm going to grow up to be the princess and I just need to be pretty and then I'm great. Like, that's what I aspire to do with my life. Mm. And boy, things change for her down the road.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think people just think she's kind of a whiny little brat and he's a whiny little brat and maybe they just deserve each other and write them off as such. One of the things that really got me about that scene that I didn't realize until I rewatched it, he legit swings his sword at Arya several times.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, with the intention to maybe kill her?
Yeah, at least hurt her.
Yeah. Like, I guess for whatever reason in my mind, I remembered it as him trying to hurt her, but not him trying to mortally wound her.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Joffrey.
Yeah.
He's not a good dude. And it's
he
interesting.
He turns into like a little sniveling brat as soon as like
the second
one wolf mauls him. Like,
and not even
on.
Mauls, bites his arm.
Bites his
chill
arm.
Out.
But it is interesting because I was
basically a dinosaur. It's enormous.
I was on board with Arya pretty much immediately. I was definitely in the camp of hating Sansa, like right off the bat, and now she's one of my favorite characters. So it is interesting, and also it's interesting to see how far the Hound has come when he runs down the butcher's board, and he definitely went right to the bad guy column in that moment. And now, like a lot of these characters, Jamie's another interesting one watching these early episodes and comparing your feelings now with then. It's like he still did shove a kid out the window.
Yeah, Jamie's like supreme bad guy in this first season, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, and like the Hound, I root for the Hound now, but he's like, he did murder. Like, again, that was definitely Queen Cersei told him to kill the butcher's boy.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know how far that justifies
so
anything.
Well, he seemed to like he enjoyed it.
Exactly. And now I'm like, I like him. I like him as a character.
Rough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of people, myself included, would probably say the same for Jamie. And I feel like that's what the series does so well, is really gives you the good and the bad of many of our characters. It's very rare that we get a super two-dimensional character. Ramsay being one of them. Joffrey being one of them.
Yeah. Viserys being one of them. You're right, because they're usually the straight-up bad guys. I would say the Joffrey, of those three we just mentioned, Joffrey's the most three-dimensional. Dimensional of them, because you do get a little, because you see his parents and you see the way he was raised and you see like the environment that created him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I think this episode's also really important for our lead characters, because there's a lot of hemming and hawing in the first episode with Ned and Catelyn of like, oh, should I go? Should I not go? And you're like, what? Why wouldn't you go? And now you're seeing like, oh, because it's dealing with these people is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
All the royal stuff is, and it just gets worse from here. It's like, this is a nightmare.
Could he even say no, though?
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really. Well, and it's a month's ride, which I know, DJ, in our previous episode, you had mentioned that, oh, time moves very quickly this early on, too. but it's a month's ride. So, like, when you think about the fact that, like, when he left, I kind of thought to myself, like, is this the last time he ever sees his sons alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, straight 100%. Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, of course he didn't want to leave, because you never know what's going to happen to your family, especially in the Stark mentality of winter is coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You never know what's going to happen. So that was a huge sacrifice. And he had to leave while Bran was still unconscious. So he didn't know if he was leaving Bran to die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, holy crap.
Yeah. And speaking of that, like with the whole assassin coming in and like mentioning Valyrian steel, that was a fun, like, Easter egg, the one
that's
we get later.
When you rewatch the show, it's every time somebody mentions Valyrian steel, it's like, hold on to that.
Yeah.
Don't lose that.
That's
don't
important.
Throw that away.
Yeah.
That's
even the whore that's supposed to train Dany was like, I met somebody with a real dragon glass dagger. Where did they keep that?
Yeah.
Do you know where that, could you find that again? Because it matters.
They drop that in C, because we would I wouldn't mind getting some, just a little bit.
Carry that with you.
Speaking of swords. One of the Stark boys, right before he got an almost really important speech from his dad, but we're going to hold off on that. We had Jon go up to the north, and he got to see the wall for the first time, which I always think is really cool when you get to see that, because it's massive.
Yeah.
It's enormous. And we also see, it's either in this episode or the next, but I think it's actually in the next episode, so I won't get ahead of myself. I like his interactions with the rest of the Night's Watch, the younger boys.
Yeah. We will get there.
I like that scene a lot, but also you get a lot, you get more scenes with Tyrion and Jon. And
I've got such a good rapport. This is where I think this is the episode where Tyrion talks about mine needs a book like a sword needs a whetstone, and you kind of get an understanding of like their dynamic is so cool.
It immediately made me like Tyrion, to be like, oh, I know which D&D member of the campaign you are, and I like you.
Gotcha, figured it out.
Super important. And then, like we said, during this, we also saw Ned kill. Little puppy. Big puppy.
He passes it and has to swing the sword.
Yeah, it was really fascinating the way that the series cut the direwolf lady dying in with Bran waking up from the dreams. I guess in the series, they don't really show that he's having dreams at that point. It's just the direwolf dies and Bran wakes up, which I thought, I was like, oh, what were they trying to imply there?
Now move forward.
Foreshadowing. Interesting.
Yeah, I kind of like that choice. That was very interesting. Some kind of fun things that I noticed about this episode, right off the bat, when we see Tommen and Marcella.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, Tommen definitely gets recast. I think Marcella, the same actress.
No, Marcella gets recast too. They both get recast. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I was like, either she's just super younger because of the ages that they were cast over the span of time. Okay. Yep. Recast Tommen and Marcella.
Yeah.
And this never stood out to me when I originally watched it, and for whatever reason to me this time was like, oh my god, and I had to like go down an internet rabbit hole. Cersei coming in and telling Catelyn about the black haired baby she had that she lost.
Little clue.
What?
Little clue dropped. Oops.
What? And so at first I was strong. I was like, she must be lying.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have any baby. And then I went on an internet rabbit hole and found out this is, if she's to be believed, this is a series book discrepancy. But it was very interesting to me because I was like, Cersei never had a black-haired baby.
Interesting.
Right away.
I assumed it's like this is one of the things, because the more you find out about Cersei, the more you see her justifications for her behavior. And this was probably one of the, like, she failed to have a baby with Robert, and which kind of probably helped lead her into Jamie's arms. And
you know, you do.
And it's a little hint about, like, the little mystery Ned's trying to unravel, that, like, the seed is strong. You know what I mean?
I thought that, or I either thought, ooh, this is a Cersei manipulation at its finest.
No.
I thought it might have been a tactic.
No. It's hard to say with her.
Yeah.
Can I also say that I really like Rob? He's very pretty, and I really enjoy his character, and I'm going to be sad very soon. We had a couple more weeks.
No, yeah, we've got a few more. This is reminding me that I'm very on board with John. I know there's been some critics who are like, oh, John's boring. It's like, no, I'm on board with John. I think John's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of him. I like his relationship with Tyrion. Like you were saying, when we get more interaction with him and the people on the wall, I think John's great, and especially in later seasons, he's basically the one tether we get to old school Ned. Getting stuff done. Because that's another cool thing about Ned, is not only is he a straight shooter, but he gets stuff done, man.
You're a big fan.
As well as
getting murdered.
Yeah.
Which is another critique that people say John's too close to Ned and it makes him too soft for this world.
Mm. Mm.
Maybe that's what you need. Speaking of needing, we need a question. And there's one here from Daniel. There's no last name. Thank you for doing that for me, because that makes it easier. Quaid's question is, why do you think King Robert chooses to go up to Winterfell as opposed to summoning Ned to King's Landing? Is there much significance to Robert choosing to leave his throne behind for the task of getting a new hand of the king? Interesting. There's also another question here, but we'll start with that one and we'll get to that one after.
They needed all the characters of the show in one spot, and they had the Winterfell set. And so that's
fine. Oh, come on.
That's too negative. No, I think it's a family vacation.
I think it's to
National Lampoons.
One, he knows it's a big ask. Two, mm-hmm. it's an excuse to get out of a place that he clearly hates.
Mm-hmm.
Three, he probably wants to see the tomb of
Lyanna.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I always took it as respect for the title, respect for the position of the hand, because, I mean, when Ned and Catelyn are speaking ahead of time, they're like, the only thing he would travel north for was to ask you to be the hand. So it must be respect for that title. And also, yeah, he probably knew, like, I'm going to ask Ned to maybe never see his kids and wife again.
Yeah.
I should at least go.
Yeah. Mm.
You guys are being more respectful. I just remembered my family would go to Mammoth sometime for skiing, and Winterfell's colder than King's Landing. So
yeah, they do go on a hunt.
Mm-hmm. They go on a hunt.
They go on a hunt.
Mm-hmm. And they go into definitely to the catacombs in Paris. Yeah. Yeah, it's a blast.
Robert is clearly bored with being king. He does like being king.
Mm-hmm.
He wants his friend. He wants his frat buddy to come and hang out with him. I don't want to make these decisions anymore.
I also
think
that's really interesting, is the friend, the clear dedication they have to each other, even though they are clearly very different people.
Yeah.
Their values are super different. Their things that matter to them are, but there's still that like brotherhood that they have, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm. We also have a fun question here. It's like, how long did it take for you guys to get all the names straight? Because I struggled. That's from Daniel.
You were reading the book.
Oh,
so
God.
You
had, with the books, it took me the first three books, maybe, to
does
get kind of a, everybody straight.
Does it come with a glossary or an index?
So there are family trees in the back where it's just, I can show you what they look like. It's just text walls mm-hmm. of who is offspring of who, and it's separated by house. Mm-hmm. So like House Baratheon has 3 or 4 pages of bullet pointed people, and House Stark has 3 or 4 pages of bullet pointed people. And that includes their bannermen, not just the immediate family
cool.
as well. So it's like when you're reading, like every page I was dog-earing and flipping to the back and going back and forth and going, which is part of why it took me so long to read the books.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a lot easier in the series when you have a person to picture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine, honestly, I can't imagine with the book, like with the show, because you always have the, and that's how you describe him, like, oh, the pretty blonde dude. Oh, yeah, Jamie. Yeah, yeah. That's how you, like, the first season or so, that's how you talk to your friends about it. It's like, yeah, blonde guy. You know, and they're like, yeah, okay, yeah.
Instead, you're like, you know, the one whose name is spelled funny, and then the other one whose name is spelled funny. Mm.
Yeah, although they have normal, if you say them, the names sound normal, Jamie and Ned, but, like, if you look at the spelling, it's all over the map.
And Ned is actually Eddard.
Yeah. The N is not in the name. There's no N in his name. You change the first letter. That's not how nickname. It's Ed. Well, it should be Ed.
It's not Caitlin. It's Catlin. Yeah. And yeah, everyone's a little.
So how does this, for us, as we're winding down, how does this stack up to the first episode for us?
I still enjoy it. I think it's about equal. I wish, now talking about it with you guys, I kind of wish they did more work. Rewatching, I understand where Sansa is at with, like, that she's supposed to be a princess. Like, that's, and what she's told, and that's what she wants.
That's all she's got right
also,
now.
Also, who doesn't want to be a princess if you think about it? And then, like, and so it's, and then you, it's kind of like when you, you try to have, like, the perfect, like, friend date, but you have a little sibling there that's being a little shit, and they ruin it, and you're like, oh, but I was trying to make a good impression.
No.
And that's what it imagined, but instead it's you accidentally, like, it led to the death of a little boy and your favorite dog. And it's like, you know, it's. I understand. I wish there was a little bit more done for Sansa, so like we mm-hmm. could understand more,
yeah.
Like mm-hmm. where her head's at. But still, really good episode. And I think my favorite storyline is seeing Dany start to come into her own pretty fast, like pretty early on. Mm-hmm. But that's for me, Trisha.
Yeah, I don't know that this episode is as beloved for me as the first one, only because mm-hmm. we get so many beautiful first moments and introductions in the first episode, but I think this is a great episode. It moves the story right along,
mm-hmm.
And it hits a lot of the major points that we need to hit to keep that momentum going.
Keep on trucking.
There we go. DJ? So, I dig it. I love the way this show builds out its world. It's funny rewatching these shows, characters that we're going to talk about in the next few episodes that are really important in the show but haven't even been introduced yet. So that's, I'm really looking forward to talking more
in episode 3 of Hard to Say Goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you rate and review wherever you can, because that always helps us out. But also check out patreon.com/hardtosaygoodbye. That's how we do this. That's the only way we can do it. Yes. And
honestly, is the only way we can do it.
There's a way you can watch this live when we record. You can watch the episodes along with us, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. You can get bonus episodes, which we're very excited to talk about. So make sure you don't miss out. We're comparing the books to the show.
Yeah.
And there's different topics each week, and I'm very, or whenever they come out, and so make sure you don't miss out on that. Trisha, where can they find you?
You can find me on the interwebs at That Girl Trish with no I in the girl, so there it's just go. That GRL Trish.
DJ?
DJ Talks Trash every place that matters.
And I'm at Sam Bashur everywhere that it matters. We appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.